Good afternoon. My name is Vernell, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Environmental Defense Fund teleconference. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you have already done so, please press the pound sign now. Then press star one again to ensure your question is registered. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. David Yarnell, Executive Director. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's call to share some big news and some high fives over the action that U.S. CAP took today, the release of our 2 years in the making blueprint for legislative action. As many of you know, EDF helped build and launch U.S. CAP more than 2 years ago. It's an unprecedented coalition that calls for a declining cap on greenhouse gases and a trading system to implement it. It includes 26 powerful and influential businesses, ranging from GE to GM to Duke Energy, the third largest coal burner in the U.S., to Shell and Conoco, to PG&E and Johnson & Johnson and PepsiCo, and many others. In addition, the NGOs are represented by EDF and four others. So today, U.S. CAP renewed its call to pass cap and trade legislation, carrying the blueprint for legislative action to the Hill. There's no question in my mind that when we go back and look at the history of climate legislation, that today will be one of those markers. I want to make one point to begin with, and it's really important, and that is that this blueprint was a direct response to a request from legislators for a path forward. They were looking for this coalition to help answer some of the thorniest questions facing them, and we've been working closely with their staffs, but more than anything, we have been working behind the scenes and putting in countless hours for these companies to come to the table with shared interests. And in that sense, this really is a remarkable document, and it is, again, a remarkable feat of CEO leadership. The U.S. CAP folks were all over Capitol Hill today. They began with a briefing for legislative leaders. They had a press conference at the National Press Club. They went on to a congressional hearing, the first of the year of this session on climate. And Fred Krupp, our president, testified before the House Energy and Commerce Committee, answering questions about cost containment and offsets. And so today we've asked Elizabeth Thompson, EDF's legislative director on the Hill, to join us for this call. Elizabeth is the co-chair of the executive committee of U.S. CAP and has been one of the driving forces behind U.S. CAP for more than 2.5 years. And I can't tell you how effectively she's worked and how much she's put into it and how proud Fred and I are of her work. She's just back from the hearings that Congressman Henry Waxman held on the Hill, and it's a pleasure to have Elizabeth with us. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you, David.
So we're also joined today on the phone by members of the Catalyst Circle, major individual and foundation contributors, planned giving donors, trustees of EDF, and the Environmental Defense Action Fund trustees, national council members, strategic partners, and other close friends. We hope that you'll join this conversation by dialing in and talking directly with us. We'd really like for this to be a dialogue. I'll begin with a couple of questions and then open the line up to your comments and questions. If you need to reach an operator during the call, just hit the star key followed by zero. Also, starting tomorrow, you'll be able to access a podcast of this call at environmentaldefenseblogs.org/podcast. So, Elizabeth, what are the headlines from today?
I will try to give a very succinct overview. It is a 31 very dense 10-page document, and I think there's a lot of detail there that I look forward to explaining and working with people through as the time goes on. But some of the highlights. One of the big highlights is targets and timelines. USCAP is calling for emission reduction targets for the total U.S. emissions and for cap sectors that are in 2012, 97 to 102% of 2005. In 2020, 80 to 86% of 2005. It's all benchmarked to 2005. 58% of 2005 by 2030. And 20% of 2005 by 2050. The 2020 time frame, those ranges include what President-elect Obama has put forward, and the last number, the 2050 number, is in line with that. These are very stringent targets. They, when you add up the numbers and when you plot the lines, this puts the U.S. on an emission trajectory analogous, very close to the tightest bills that are out there in Congress. It's very important to understand that USCAP is calling for a cap. It has a lot of detail on how to handle the cap sectors, but it's also calling for emission reduction targets for the total U.S. emissions. So that's a very important issue. Another key feature of USCAP is some people remember when we started 2 years ago, there was one oil company that was a member of USCAP. When we increased membership, we increased and it got two additional oil companies and a number of the major automakers. That means this blueprint has a fairly detailed set of transportation policy prescriptions, one of which is putting, into use sort of a colloquialism, putting fuel under the cap, which means that a number of oil companies have essentially agreed to be regulated. That might not seem like such a big deal, but for those of us who worked on the Senate last spring, keeping oil under the cap, we realized, was a very, very difficult political task. So this is one of the key elements of the blueprint. Another area that has received a lot of attention in the past couple days, and I think is getting a lot of media attention, is USCAP has started to speak to allocation of allowances. And I think I would just like to spend a very brief amount of time just explaining what USCAP is recommending. USCAP in the call for action recommended that there would be significant portion of free allowances initially, and that would be phased out over time. We've now put some meaning to what, you know, explain that. For the electric utility sector, they are organized by mechanism by which you have something called local distribution companies that are highly regulated, and they are very close to the consumer. They are the ones who are responsible for the wires and the pipes into your house. USCAP is saying for a short period of time, these so-called LDCs should get allowances. The LDCs are required by state law to pass the benefit to the consumer. The LDCs cannot do anything else with that benefit. They can't give it to shareholders. They can't do it anything else. So it's a very powerful way of protecting the consumers. And I just thought, David, I would highlight that point because I think there is sometimes some misunderstanding on this methodology.
Well, I'm sure that folks are going to have some questions about that. Thank you, Elizabeth. I want to offer some instructions about how you can join this, and then I have a couple of thoughts and some questions for you, Elizabeth. Feel free to hit the star key and then 1 to jump into the queue. That is the star key and then 1, and we invite your questions. If your question is answered while you're waiting, you can remove yourself from the queue by hitting the pound key. And then if you need the operator's assistance, press the star key and 0. But let's start with star and 1 to get your questions into the queue. I want to sort of step back and say that really this is a very integrated vision for the economy. It's about magnifying the effect of any stimulus package and the creation of customers and the unleashing of innovation in the economy. And so these targets that Elizabeth talked about are tightly integrated with the creation of a program for offsets, as EDF has talked about many times. It's linked with the full participation of all of these sectors. It anticipates the need for these companies to be on a glide path that allows them to fully participate, and it is a cap that reduces over time because it anticipates innovation. So this is, in many ways, this is the starting gun that we talk about all the time, and this is the opportunity. This is what the starting gun could look like, and there's zero chance that it will become what final legislation looks like, but certainly this will inform the debate, this will help shape the debate, and just as Senator John Warner said to us 2 years ago when U.S. CAP was launched, when he said to U.S. CAP, you have changed the game by your presence, today's blueprint, with the kind of specifics that it has in it, will help reshape the debate. You're going to be reading a lot about this. There's already a lot on the Internet from the left and from the right, and it encourages me, and it tells me that we're somewhere between them, and we're absolutely taking the right path, because this is these companies are calling for certainty in terms of regulation so that they can get on with building their companies and recovering from the recession and creating jobs, and at the same time putting first the environmental goals.
Yeah, I think...
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I think one of the most interesting dynamics is that the U.S. CAP negotiations on the blueprint intensified over the past 6 months, and I think in part because some of the major businesses realize that the uncertainty is, to use almost an overstatement, is killing them, that the uncertainty of the future of carbon regulation, it was paralyzing their industry, and that's certainly true for the electric utility industry. And that in order to drive capital investment, in order to, you know, create jobs, they actually need the carbon cap. They need the certainty. So there's an alignment of interest that led to the blueprint.
And were there questions today about why now? Should we do this while we're so occupied with a stimulus package? Should we do this while the economy is flat on its back?
There were many, many questions today because we had a hearing on the House side, we had a meeting on the Senate side, and then we also met with the incoming administration. And to every question about why we should do this now, people had a variety of answers, all of which were saying, yes, we think actually now is a good time. We think now that not only could a cap amplify the impacts of the stimulus, you will unlock private investment, and as one CEO said, we can't transform twice, right? If you're going to really invest in a stimulus package of the size and the magnitude that we're talking about, and then, you know, 2 years come back and want to transform us again, that doesn't make any sense. Let's do it once, and let's do it right. And I was in a meeting with Larry Summers where a number of these CEOs made that argument very powerfully.
And so in your last meeting today, you had members of the incoming administration, key players in the room with the CEOs, didn't you?
Yes, Carol Browner, John Podesta, and Larry Summers.
That's terrific. But really, this almost didn't happen. In mid-December, there were a lot of very important critical issues that had come to a loggerhead, and the CEOs got together, and you were in the room. What happened? What was it like?
Well, I think it is safe to say that before this meeting, there were a number of people who were very skeptical whether U.S. CAP had a future whatsoever. We were trying to deal with the very difficult issues around allowance allocation, around targets and timetables, around offsets, all these linkages that you were talking about. And there was a fateful meeting in GE's headquarters where most of the CEOs were there, and they did what they do best, which is they made decisions. And I think there was a collective sense of the room that the timing was now, that EDF and the environmental organizations realized that it's a difficult fight in Congress with an incoming administration with a very weak economy. There's so much on the incoming administration's plate. And we also realized that we could make a very, very good deal on the targets and timetables. Businesses had their own interests, and there was a coming together of those interests. Jeff Immelt from GE, as he has in the past, played a strong leadership role, as did Fred.
Terrific. I've heard other accounts of this and the leadership that Fred brought to that room, and we're all terrifically humbled by what he did. So I want to go to the questions. Again, if you'd like to get in the queue, hit the star key and then one. Operator, let's go to the first question, please. Hello.
Our first question comes from the line of Mr. Liddell.
Hello, Roger.
Good afternoon, David and Elizabeth. One of the biggest criticisms that opponents of cap and trade, or shall we say proponents of the carbon tax, is that Wall Street will game the system and subvert the public interest. I should think the success of the sulfur dioxide trading over so many years would be enough to quell that argument, but in any event, could somebody help me as to how we should try to overcome that threat or that assertion?
Well, I think one of the areas, and we got asked this question sometimes on the Hill today too, is because of the lack of transparency in the financial markets, as we all know about now, one of the things that US CAP is calling for is very, you know, clear transparency in all the markets, and that will go a long way. Having some very clear rules, having some rules to prevent market manipulation. So US CAP recognizes that, and you know, and we're stand ready to work with Congress to flesh out that. But that is definitely an important issue. I think that the scope and the breadth of the CO2 trading program raises that issue in a way that wasn't quite there in the acid rain program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if I could, a follow-on. The giving away of rather than auctioning of proceeds is an issue in that the auction proceeds were supposed to be directed toward efficiency investments.
Yes.
At the customer end. How do we deal with that issue?
Well, it's important to remember that the distribution of free allowances happen at the beginning of the program in order to mitigate the impact to the consumers. There is absolutely the vision to move to an auction system in order to fund the transformation to the low-carbon economy over and over again. Roger, you would have been so happy today. All these CEOs were talking about energy efficiency, the first fuel. You know, the absolutely critically clear energy efficiency. One will be, you know, the first thing that happens under a cap and trade program, and that it's something that the government in certain areas can help jumpstart. So I think there's a very clear need and a recognition of moving to auction. It's managing the transition in an orderly fashion.
And it is, help me if I've got this wrong, Elizabeth, but it's actually US CAP's stated goal that we would move toward a full auction system.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is EDF at its best. My hearty congratulations to all of you involved in this.
Roger, thank you so much for that, and thank you for your call. And let me invite everybody else on the line to jump in. Hit the star key and then one, and we're eager to hear your questions. Operator, let's go to the next call.
Our next question comes from the line of Dieter von Leisten.
Good afternoon, David and Elizabeth.
Hello, Dieter.
I have a double question. First, could you give me proper arguments why the cap and the auction system, and why not tax, as so many people seem to who criticize the cap say, we want a tax system simpler and easier to monitor? And the second question is, where do you see what Obama and everyone for new energies and saving and cap always talk about is, where do you see new jobs from coming from? Two questions.
Thank you. On the tax code, I will confess, I actually have a master's in tax law, and I was going to become a tax lawyer until I went into the non-governmental organization world. There's nothing simple about the tax code. You have to make these same decisions about winners and losers when you figure out who gets taxed and who doesn't. There is just nothing simpler about it. So I think that people who say that really haven't seen all the regulations that go with the Internal Revenue Code. Two, again, just to reiterate, for us, a tax doesn't guarantee environmental performance. So it's just essentially a non-starter in terms of if you really want to manage to save the climate. As to your other question about, could you repeat the
jobs.
Second part of your question?
Jobs.
The jobs. Well, the incoming administration has been spending a lot of time in trying to figure out what green jobs are ready to go fast. And I think a lot of their focus has been on some of the smart grid investment. There was actually a lot of conversation today about transmission lines and getting those funded and going, and those will help create green jobs. So I think people are starting to think about the green jobs as sort of two tranches, right? There are the green jobs that you can get right now, and then there are the ones you build over time as the U.S. really invests in low-carbon economies. One of a theme today was Jeff Immelt saying that, you know, he exports clean technology, right? So that means that he builds a lot of it here in the U.S. That's what we need to grow.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
And, Dieter, I want to chime in there and say that, you know, these aren't hypothetical jobs. These are real jobs. I mean, we can look at a company like Cree Technologies in North Carolina, where they've gone from and they're one of the country's largest holders of patents on LEDs, and they've gone from having 200 plus employees to 2,800 plus employees.
David, thanks for the information. I'm an investor in that company.
So you're a happy man as far as that
company. I'm a very happy man in a lousy market otherwise.
And if you have any other stock tips to share with this call, feel free.
Yeah.
Thank you so much
thank
for that,
you, David.
Dieter. Okay. Let's go to the next call operator. If you'd like to join the queue, please hit star and then one.
Our next question comes from the line of Andrew Hughes.
Hello, Andrew.
Good afternoon. I believe it was last Sunday, but I read an article in the New York Times that suggested the Obama administration might take cap and trade off the fast track, at least for now, and as part of his economic package, try to accomplish goals like beefing up alternative fuels in the short term. I'm just wondering how feasible you think cap and trade is this year.
Well, so on that very point, Henry Waxman opened the hearing that we had today on U.S. cap with the very clear intention and declaration that he was going to mark up a climate and energy bill by Memorial Day. So that means he's planning to mark up a cap and trade bill in a few months. And that is fundamental, that is critical. If you can make it through energy and commerce in the House, you can make it off the House floor. If the House leads, the Senate will follow, and the administration can play the key critical role of leadership in driving home some powerful deals. I think it's not surprising you saw an article like the New York Times. The administration, incoming administration, has a lot on its plate. You're clearly going to see them wanting to manage expectations. Our job is to say, no, you don't have to look at this as a political loser. This is a political winner. Here's how you do it. here's how we cross the finish line. And that is really one of the fundamental purposes of U.S. CAP. So I think there's going to be this ongoing challenge of can we do it now or do we postpone it? I think that's going to be a very key point, and it's a great question.
And this administration has more than a little on its plate. And ensuring that this legislation stays front and center is our top priority. And the fact that so many of these CEOs and so many of these legislators understand the linkage between the need to create customers and to amplify the effects of a stimulus package and the role that climate legislation can play in that is absolutely critical. And so we'll continue on all fronts through our strategic partners program, with the media, with our staff, and with your help to continue to make that clear so that this is a priority. But the signal that Elizabeth talked about, Waxman's statement today, was a moment to remember. Elizabeth, what were your big takeaways from today? Of the, you know, what one or two things were most memorable? Was there a moment? Was there something someone said? I realize that you just dashed over from the Hill and you haven't had a lot of time to reflect on this. But what were your one or two big takeaways?
One of my biggest takeaways is that we really truly are in the middle of a legislative fight, that people are really thinking about things very concretely. And the reason why I know that is because people are getting grumpy, and they're fighting over things. And, you know, we've moved from the era of generalities to the era of specifics. I think the other very important takeaways was the resonance on the Hill on the uncertainty argument.
What do you mean by the uncertainty argument?
When the business CEOs made the argument that with the uncertainty, we don't know where to go. We don't know where to invest. We don't know what to do with the money. And the worst possible outcome would for us to invest the money here, and then a year and a half from now, you say no here. And that had resonance with a tremendous number of people. You could tell members of Congress were nodding their heads when the CEOs would say that. Incoming administration officials, one very important one said, yes, you can never underestimate the paralyzing nature of uncertainty. That resonated in a very deep, profound way.
Pretty interesting. Let's go to our call queue. Feel free to join. We're eager to hear your questions. Press star and then one. Operator?
Our next question comes from the line of Arthur Cooley.
Hi, Elizabeth and David. Congratulations. This is absolutely fabulous.
Thanks, sir.
Just wonderful.
Good to hear from you.
I wonder if you could clarify a little bit. You seem to suggest, Elizabeth, that we kind of have to do the House first and then the Senate will be next. Have we lost some of the Senate leadership where they might be able to be parallel to the House, or isn't that how things run? Could you talk a little more about that?
Yes, I'm happy to. A former EDF staffer who now works on the Hill used to say, you know, the House legislates and you just get through the Senate. And I think on this issue, in order to build momentum to get over some hurdles, the momentum that you can get from the House moving early, at least this is my legislative strategy thinking, can help move the Senate forward. I don't know how the Senate's going to operate in 111th, right? Last year it was very much characterized because of a number of issues by some level of paralysis. I think that we have the group of conservative Democrat senators, Sherrod Brown, Claire McCaskill, people who represent states that are having a very difficult time. This is going to be a very, very tough vote for them. They are not going to vote yes unless it's clear to them we're actually making law. And I think that that's very important for us to really be very serious and methodical about it. I also want to be clear, I think we're moving into an era where hopefully the administration and the Senate and the House will work collaboratively, and that the bills that, you know, they all put forth are very closely aligned. And so that also will help speed of passage.
Hey, Elizabeth, what does it mean that Henry Waxman is chairing that committee now?
It means his first hearing was on U.S. CAP, that he is tackling climate change, he's digging into it, and he is going to go. And Markey was there, who is now chair of the all-important, I'm blanking on the title of the subcommittee that he now heads up, was there with him, also very focused, very driven. They're going.
Art, did you have a follow-up question?
Well, it was a somewhat different question, and I wonder why Thomas Friedman is so in favor of taxes. And it doesn't seem to me that you can export taxes on carbon to other countries, but cap and trade is something that can be handled by a treaty. And why doesn't that argument get used more to convince these people that tax, just a carbon tax, is not going to be adequate to the problem, because these other foreign countries have got to be participants? The United States can't do it alone.
You raise an excellent, excellent point. And when people talked about the need to do a cap and trade system here and how you could build that into a truly international system, there was a lot of head nodding. And I think you're right. I think that's an underused argument that we need to deploy more.
Good. Well, I'm sure you'll figure out how to do it. Keep up the good work.
Okay, so we have, let's take our next caller. If you'd like to join, please press star and then one. I think we're going to go for another 5 minutes or so. Operator, let's go to the next call.
Yes, our next question comes from the line of Allison Cobb.
Hi, Allison.
Hi, thank you for having me. I know that this document was a compromise, and I wonder if EDF is satisfied with all of the provisions in the blueprint.
Well, it's like any other document of this kind. It's like any piece of legislation. You're never going to be completely satisfied with every provision. But we think that on balance, this is a great starting point, and it's a very fair representation of our priorities, whether you're talking about the need for offsets, the ability to bring in compensated reduction for deforestation, whether you're talking about the stringency of the timetables. We think that in almost every regard, the blueprint is in the ballpark. Elizabeth, you have your fingerprints all over this. What's your view of it?
I think that's right. I think EDF was able, along with the NGO partnership, to achieve our goals in this document. Otherwise, we would have never signed on to it if it didn't have the environmental integrity that it has to have. Are there provisions in this document that if we were writing it, that we would put in? No, of course not. That's the definition of working in a coalition.
So I want to go back to, thanks for that, Elizabeth. I want to go back and underscore something related to Art's question and your answer, Elizabeth. So often the proponents of a tax say, first and foremost, it's easiest, it's simplest. But I want to go back to the point Elizabeth made, and that is that the problem with the tax is that it doesn't put the environmental benefit first. It doesn't achieve the fundamental goal. Nobody knows what level to set that tax at. And Elizabeth's point about having a degree in tax codes is well taken. Going back and refining a tax and opening that can as frequently as you'd need to adjust it just isn't practical. But most important is there's just no way to ensure the environmental outcome. And unless you put it first and make it one of the pillars of the proposal, it's a crapshoot. Is that fair, Elizabeth?
A technical term.
So let me thank you all. As you know, the next few months could be absolutely pivotal. They will be pivotal. We can't predict with certainty what the timetable will look like, but we know one thing for sure. We have never, ever been this close to winning climate legislation. When you look back at what Michael Oppenheimer was saying more than 20 years ago when he was one of the first scientists to sound the alarm, it was hard to envision that we would arrive at this day. We are throwing absolutely everything that we can at this issue. And I'm going to wrap up by saying thank you. Without your help, without your support, we wouldn't be here, and we are absolutely committed to ensuring the future of the planet, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate your help and your support. We thank you for joining this call. If you want additional information or a CD recording, please contact Emily Chook. You can reach Emily at 800-505-0703, extension 1225, or echook@environmentaldefense.org, the same email address that you RSVP'd to. And let me offer a special thank you for joining this call and for helping to bring USCAP to this momentous day to Elizabeth Thompson. Elizabeth, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of the day.
This does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.